This episode is brought to you by Revolut, your travel companion for all things money. Revolut lets you spend in over 150 currencies with great exchange rates and doesn't charge for ATM withdrawals wherever you are in the world. You can set up an account in minutes and then instantly add your new card to Apple Pay or Google Wallet. Receive £20 when you first spend £20 when you sign up at revolut.com/Spotify reward until 17th of September 2024. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Exchange fees and fair usage limits apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Hey, it's me, Dave Stone, former co-host of the Boogie Monster podcast. From 2016 to 2023, myself and Kyle Kinane got together each week to ramble on about ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, and other mysteries of the universe. Or at least that was our initial intentions. But if you've listened before, you know that it usually devolved into disjointed rants about vans and fried chicken. During that time, we also ran a Patreon page that offered up exclusive bonus episodes to our patrons, usually in the form of Q&A sessions. And even though the Boogie Monster is currently on an indefinite hiatus, we're offering up those old bonus episodes to the general population so that everyone can enjoy our old nonsense. Hopefully someday soon we'll dust off our microphones and resurrect the Boogie Monster, but until then, enjoy a blast from the past from your old pals Kyle and Dave. Thanks for listening. I just noticed I don't have like an intro for this, you know, since it's it's a new thing. It's a new thing I'm doing here. Dave's Kitchen Q&A episode. You know, we're all locked down. We're all stuck inside. Ugh, I got the bronchitis. Sorry. Don't have the corona. Don't have the rona. I got the itis. sorry. But, yeah, we're all locked down, so I figured, you know, rather than just doing one recipe, one video, why not let's roll our sleeves up and let's talk turkey and chicken and beef and pork and whatever you want to talk about. Dave's Kitchen Q&A episode. Haven't done one of these before. I mean, I've done the live chat on the Patreon page, but you know, you get it. It's the same format, the same stupid flow as the regular bonus Q&A, but without Kyle. Yeah, who needs him? No, it's hard to get Kyle. I've been trying to get him on Dave's Kitchen, but he's so uninterested in cooking. This is a guy who makes barbecue sauce out of old salsa and pickles and stuff. So he's, you know, plus he doesn't eat meat. So he's a liability at this point, let's be honest. I thought, you know, why not have you guys holler at me on the Patreon page, and I would respond, and let's talk some food. You know, hope you guys are doing well. Hope you're, you know, staying safe, staying sane as well. You know, that's another thing we all have to think about. You know, you got to stay safe and healthy, but you also got to stay sane because too much time indoors, you get the cabin fever. Last night at 2 o'clock in the morning, I just went out and sat in my car and watched the block, watched the neighborhood, and just to get some fresh air and get out of the house, but still, you know, maintaining my social distance. I'm cooking today. Oh boy, I can smell it. I got I got my chicken tortilla soup simmering. By the way, yeah, Dave's kitchen survival guide. Sorry to keep talking in third person, but that's the name of the thing and that's the name of the show. What did, man, I'm all hopped up on cough meds too, so I apologize. Kitchen Survival Guide, got 3 volumes of those, 20 to 25 recipes in each volume. If you want to buy those, that's great. You can hit me up wherever, you know, DaveStoneComedy@gmail.com. Hit me up on the Twitter, the Instagram, whatever. If, like a lot of people, you're in a pinch financially and you can't really afford the $10, one for 10, 2 for 16, all 3 for 20. If you can't afford that, that's fine. And you still need some recipes. You need to up your game, you know, with all that's going on. Just holler at me. I'll give them to you for free. All right. Not trying to profit off of people who are struggling. I mean, yes, I need the income. I'm in the same boat as a lot of people. But at the same time, you know, you got to eat. you got to cook. And, you know, if money's an issue, don't worry about it. Just give me a holler. I'll hook you up. That being said, that's why I started talking about that. Chicken tortilla soup. Got the chicken tortilla soup going. Got the pureed oven roasted garlic and onions and pasilla peppers and pasilla. Got the tomatillos in there. Got the beer. Got the chicken. I'm doing something different this time. My recipe calls for a boneless, skinless chicken thighs. I got a whole bird. I chopped up a whole bird and just throwing in parts. I got thighs and legs and wings and all kinds of good stuff floating around in that thing. I'm going to simmer it all damn day. Oh, it's going to be good. It smells good. But yeah, so let's get into it. See what you guys have asked me. Ty Babb. That's a good name. Ty Babb. What are your thoughts on the Kentucky Hot Brown? Ever made one? How would you put a Dave Stone twist on it? I don't have a ton of experience with that. However, it's odd that you would mention that because, for those who don't know, the Kentucky Hot Brown, what is it? It's like an open-faced turkey sandwich, maybe a little bacon on there, a little Parmesan cheese, something, and the gravy. Does it have gravy? I don't know if the Hot Brown has gravy or not. Not super familiar with the Kentucky Hot Brown. What I do, it's funny that you mentioned that because I did it this week. I am a fan. When I worked at the Albert in Atlanta, we had a sandwich called the Yankee. And all the Yankee was a piece of white bread, untoasted, just sandwich white bread, turkey. I think we used like the deli stuff, you know, wasn't that great. And then turkey gravy, brown turkey gravy on top. I, last week, when amongst all the chaos at the grocery stores, all the meat was gone at my local store, except for I was able to snag a tri-tip, and I was able to snag a giant turkey breast, about a three-pound turkey breast. And what I did last week is I roasted that turkey breast. It was beautiful. You know, Get the herb butter, rub the herb butter all under the skin, you know, a little butter with some thyme, some rosemary, maybe some Cajun seasoning, and rub that all under the skin, all on top of the skin. I didn't brine it. Usually with a turkey, I brine it, but I was kind of, you know, it was day-to-day. This was functional cooking. I didn't have time to brine that sucker for 12 hours, 24 hours like I do a Thanksgiving turkey. But I, pardon me, I roasted the turkey and sliced it up, and then with drippings, I made a nice turkey gravy. I reserved all those turkey drippings. I added some butter, some flour, a little more seasoning in there, and made a nice turkey gravy. And for like 3 days, I ate a Yankee sandwich, just a piece of white bread, some sliced up turkey breast on top, and just drowned it in that brown turkey gravy. And oh boy, was that a good time. So, the Hot Brown, I think, is kind of a variation on that. It's the turkey with, and I don't know if they do gravy or if it's just melted cheese and bacon. But, sorry, man. You know, just being honest, not going to try to pretend. I mean, I'm familiar with the Hot Brown, but I've never messed around with it myself. But my version would be the Yankee sandwich, which is really the key component is the gravy. Even if you've got deli turkey, even if you've just got some shit out of the out of the deli case, if you can whip you up a nice gravy, and you know, if you're doing deli turkey, you're probably not going to have the turkey drippings, but you can still make a nice gravy with some chicken stock, some butter and flour, some seasonings. But oh boy, it was just, Katie didn't like it at all. She's put off by bread somehow. But I literally ate it like 4 or 5 meals in a row, and it was just delicious. So, there she is sneezing in the background. You all right? You all right, boo?
Sorry.
Okay. hey, we're quarantined. But, yeah, so there you go. There you go, Ty Babb. Sorry. But, yeah, try a good Yankee sandwich. That's a good time. Dude Jordan. I hope that's your real name. That's a great name. What are your favorite and least favorite pizza toppings? All right. This is a very, very good question. My thing with pizza, outside of like any like really atypical toppings, there's nothing I don't like. When everybody's around and we're, let's get a pizza, whatever, I always just say, whatever. There's nothing on the traditional pizza topping menu that you can put on there that's going to turn me off. Even I like the ham and the pineapple. Doesn't bother me at all. If I had to pick, you know, if it's just me, I'm going with extra cheese, Italian sausage, and onion. That's I like the sausage and onion, and you got to have the extra cheese on there. But whatever, you know, the mushrooms, fine. Green bell pepper, fine. Pepperoni, fine. The one thing I will say, some of these, like, you get the meatzilla, five meats. Like, okay, take it easy. You don't need all that shit. I mean, again, doesn't bother me. I'll eat it. I'm not going to turn my nose up at it. But I don't need pepperoni and sausage and bacon and ham, you know, whatever. But yeah, there's really nothing on the traditional pizza topping menu that I'm going to turn my nose up at. Now, you want to get fancy and all these little hipster or artisanal pizza bullshit, you know, I don't need you to put asparagus or goat cheese or any of that bullshit on there. But in terms of traditional pizza toppings, don't really have a least favorite in terms of traditional. But my favorite would be Italian sausage, onion, extra cheese. So there you go. There you go, dude. Good question, dude. Stormy asks, hey, Dave, I need help. I can't cook a good pork chop to save my life. Pan-fried, oven-baked, they always come out dry. Thought I'd love to hear your tips. Understandable, Stormy. We all struggle with pork chops, let's be honest. I got something that's going to turn your whole approach around. You got to brine that shit, Stormy. Brine your pork chop. And I don't have the recipe in front of me. But usually it's just salt water, maybe a little brown sugar. You can Google a pork chop brine. But yeah, some water, add some salt, maybe a little sugar, maybe a little brown sugar. And, you know, you can boil it up if you want. You don't have to boil it, but you boil it up. That helps dissolve everything real nice. Boil it up for a few minutes, you know, whisk it up, make sure all the ingredients and everything are nice and, you know, mixed up. And then cool it back down. Cool that water back down with some ice or whatever. And then just throw your pork chop, put that brine in, you know, a big Tupperware thing or a big bowl covered up with some wrap, saran wrap or aluminum foil. And just brine that pork chop for, you know, 4 hours, 8 hours, overnight, whatever. That is going to make a world of difference, whether you pan fry it or cook it in the oven. The way I like to do it, I'll brine mine with a little salt and I think brown sugar and sometimes maybe a little rosemary or something. And then I like to just, I'll sear it. I do it like I do my steak. I sear it in the cast iron skillet, you know, for like 30, 45 seconds on each side. Get a little scald on that bitch. And then throw her in the preheated oven, about 400, 425. Yeah, and finish it off in the oven for, I don't know, 5-6 minutes aside. You know, 5 minutes, reach in there, flip it, smack it up, flip it, rub it down. But yeah, try that brine. Sorry, I don't have it in front of me right now, but you can Google a good pork chop brine, and boy, that helps keep it dry and not keep it juicy, not dry. Danielle McCammett, what are your absolute essential spices, herbs for pantry? Are there any that are overrated and unnecessary? That's a great question. My favorites, you know, obviously kosher salt. Got to have kosher salt. You got to have fresh black pepper, fresh cracked black pepper. Get you the, you know, little peppercorn cracker. You can buy them now that the little black pepper shaker has got the cracker built in. It's just a little bottle of peppercorns, and then turn it upside down, start twisting and cracking and shaking, and you get the fresh ground black pepper. But beyond that, I love, I'm a fan of, and this, I think this might get brought up in another question, but one of my go-to spices is I love smoked paprika. Oh boy, big fan of smoked paprika. A lot of people like garlic salt and garlic powder and garlic salt. I don't use a lot of garlic powder and garlic salt because I use so much fresh garlic. Most anything savory that I'm cooking is gonna have fresh, either minced or sliced or pureed garlic. So I don't use a lot of that, but I love a good, Tony Chechery's Cajun Creole seasoning, some good Cajun Creole seasoning, kind of a blackened seasoning. And if you look at the ingredients on there, that's usually just a little mixture of cayenne and paprika, and that something like that would have some garlic salt and garlic, or garlic powder and onion powder. But yeah, salt, pepper, smoked paprika. I like a little cumin. Love a little cumin in there every now and then. Love a little chili powder. A little cayenne. I'm trying to think of something that's overrated, something I don't use. I mean, you know, not overrated. Something I don't use much would be like an allspice or a clove. You know, I'll use that if I'm doing a little Indian cooking or a little jerk seasoning, you know, making a little jerk chicken or something. But I'm not saying that's overrated. It's just stuff I don't use that much. Nothing off the top of my head that I don't care for that is overrated. I mean, there's stuff I don't use as much. You know, you get the kits, the spice rack kits that have all the spices built in there for you. You know, and you're like, what the hell's dill weed? You know, star anise. You know, I mean, I know that those spices have a purpose, but that's the kind of stuff I don't really use too much. But yeah, my opinion, my go to is salt, pepper, probably smoked paprika, probably Cajun seasoning, and maybe some cumin. Gotta have that stuff. Guys, I'm sorry, I'm coughing in the mic. Again, promise, don't have corona. I've just been battling this damn stupid little cough, little bronchitis for a couple of weeks now. Adam Santoni, that's a great name. Adam Santoni sent me over here. You know Santoni. Should chicken parmesan feature a thick, juicy chicken breast or one that's pounded flat as shit like a manhole cover? That is a great, great question. If my instinct is a thick, juicy breast, juicy being the operative word there. You know how I feel about chicken breasts in general. Not a fan of the chicken breast. Like, okay, I just now thought of this. What if you did chicken parmesan with a chicken thigh? Oh boy, there you go. Oh, I'm a genius. Chicken parmesan with a nice boneless chicken thigh. Oh boy. But no, as far as your two options there, I would go with thick, juicy breast over the pounded flat. I don't know. The pounded flat, I don't know how that... I mean, that would make a good sandwich, probably. But I don't know. Traditional chicken parm, want that that big, juicy breast. But yeah, like I said, probably would opt for the chicken thigh. That's always the dark meat, baby. Don't get me started on the... big chicken propaganda. It's brainwashed us all to think that white meat is somehow superior. We won't get into that right now. Sam Sherman asked, I know this is super amateur, but how do you successfully flip an egg? When I try to make eggs over easy, 7% of the time I end up breaking the yolks. You probably flipped them too early, Sam. Gotta let that yolk get hard, or at least hard enough to where it's not going to break when you flip it. And yeah, just a good spatula. You know, if you don't have those kitchen skills where you can flip it without a spatula, you know, a good cook who's got some chops, no pun intended, he or she can do that little wrist action, little flip action, even with an egg, and that's impressive to see. But, yeah, get you a good spatula, and just I think you're flipping it a little too early. Just be careful. Yeah, let that cook it. You know, no hurry with an egg, too. You know, people cook eggs, the heat's too hot, you know, and it burns the bottom, and the yolk's still runny. Medium to medium low heat on those eggs, Sam. And yeah, don't flip it too early. Matt Thomas asked, Dave, have you ever heard of people putting noodles, usually spaghetti style, in their chili? It was a big debate at work recently. He works in Louisville. After a survey, we found people from here seem to accept it as normal, while people not from here, I'm sorry, it's one of those where you have to, there's more. He said, while people not from here find it to be weird as hell. Any thoughts? No, what do they call that? Is that Cincinnati chili? I got zero problem with that. My brother and my mom, they live in Louisville, and every time, or right outside of Louisville. Y'all have heard me talk about that, I'm sure. But every time I go to that part of the country, gotta hit up Skyline Chili. I'm sure people around, you know, who grew up with it, you know, it's not a big deal for them, but I love it. Because we don't have it out here. But Skyline Chili, I guess that's their specialty, is putting the pasta noodles, spaghetti noodles on the bottom, and then the chili on top with the diced raw white onions and the cheddar cheese. Oh, that cheese, that special, whatever cheese they're using over there at Skyline. Oh, good times. I love it. Absolutely love putting the noodles on the chili. I do that sometimes with my chili. My big thing, as much as I like that, I actually prefer a little white rice at the bottom. That's my jam. I like the white rice and then the chili and then all the toppings and accoutrements on top. But absolutely no problem with, I guess that's, is it, am I saying that right? Cincinnati style, Louisville style, whatever. But whatever they're doing there in that part of the country there, Skyline Chili, big fan. So, hey, You know, who cares what the popular opinion is? You gotta, cooking and eating is all about what you enjoy, Matt. You know, don't worry about what everybody else is doing. If you like it, more power to you. If you don't eat it. Whatever. All right, let me take a little sip of my Golden Road. Get up off of that brown. I'm drinking a brown ale today. Francis E. Donahue. Sounds like an alias. Your cast iron steak recipe has become my absolute go-to for cooking a steak. Any suggestions for sides for it? I usually just do some roasted potatoes and broccoli, but I'd like to change that up. Man, I'm a simple guy. Meat and potatoes. Speaking of roasted potatoes, I love a good homemade mashed potato. Mashed potatoes, easiest thing in the world to make. Boil up some red or gold potatoes. Keep those skins on. I like to keep the skins on. Boil those sons of bitches for about 40, 45 minutes. Get them fork tender. Drain that water in the same pot that you cooked them in. Use a colander strainer or whatever. Get rid of the water. Put the potatoes back in. Throw in a big hunk of butter, maybe some heavy cream or half and half or milk, and a little salt and pepper. You could even throw in a little rosemary. And a lot of times I will slice up some garlic and saute that in olive oil while the potatoes are cooking. And then you don't even have to have the potato masher, the traditional little masher. If you cook those potatoes properly, you can mash them up with a wooden spoon, with a set of tongs, whatever. But yeah, just smash up those potatoes, some sort of dairy, whether it be, like I said, milk, half and half, or heavy cream. Butter, salt and pepper, spices, however you want, a little garlic. You can even throw in a little cheese, a little sour cream. Oh, boy, do I love some homemade mashed potatoes. But if you're trying to be a little healthier with the broccoli and stuff, I like a good, grilled or sauteed asparagus. That's fun. Be careful, though. It makes your pee taste funny. Stupid joke. Not my joke. Shout out to, I said that on the Boogie Monster. I forgot her name. Karen Hilton. Any Atlanta folks from back in the day know Karen Hilton. It's one of her go-to jokes. Make sure pee tastes funny. Asparagus. What else? Man, I love collard greens. I don't know if steak and collard greens go that well together, but collard greens are fun. You know, get you some collard greens, slice them up, wash them up real good, slice them up. Cook up some bacon, some garlic, throw in some chicken stock or chicken broth, and then throw in the greens, and let that simmer for about an hour or two. Oh boy, that's a good time. What else we got here? Sweet Jimmy T. Hey Dave, do you have a take either way on cold day after Velveeta Rotel cheese dip? It's my most nostalgic household staple growing up in Arkansas. I love it, but it grosses out my friends. Having a take either way on cold day. I mean, are you saying that you like it cold? Now, I love a lot of food cold. I love cold fried chicken. I love cold pizza. I love cold mac and cheese. I love I love cold pasta, especially like a cream-based pasta, like a fettuccine alfredo. I love all that shit cold. I don't know about eating Velveeta Rotel cheese dip cold. Although, I mean, you know, if you could, you know, knifey off a little hunk and spread it on a cracker or chip, that sounds pretty good. I don't mess with it, though. That's just something I don't have a lot of experience with. I'm not above the Velveeta. I grew up on Velveeta. But for whatever reason, the Velveeta Rotel cheese dip is something I haven't messed with too much as an adult. So, unfortunately, I don't have any tips there, Jimmy T. But I still don't know if you mean you prefer it cold or, you know, you can always just heat it up, you know, microwave it or throw it in a saucepan, get a little heat under that and stir it around. Add a little milk if you need to. I did. We got the fondito. What is it? Queso fondito at a Mexican restaurant in our neighborhood. And when you get it in the, when you order it in at the restaurant, it's good, but it's, you know, queso fondito, it's a little too chewy and cheesy. So we got it to go the other day, and I tried to add dilute it a little bit with a little milk and, you know, make it thin it up a little bit. It's just a little too, you know, I don't know. I don't want cheese dip I can eat with a fork. And I put too much milk and it was just like a cheese milkshake. It just didn't work out. So if you're adding that milk, do small increments. You don't want to overshoot it. Alexander Hackle, what's the most overpriced cut of meat in your opinion, a.k.a. what should a wise carnivore not overpay for? this is a something I was talking about with somebody recently. The big popular thing now is the tomahawk ribeye with a giant bone sticking out. And, yeah, I get it. It looks cool. I bought those. I've cooked those. It's impressive. Looks good on the Instagram. But, yeah, remember, with any bone-in meat, you're paying for that bone as well. So, you know, stuff like that. I would stay away from anything with too much bone. I like a bone-in cut, you know, the bone just really adds to the flavor and the tenderness of the meat. But, yeah, stay away from, like, you know, when you're getting as much bone as you are meat, that's what you have to be careful for. As far as overpriced, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, other stuff. I mean, filet mignon. You know, that's one of the priciest cuts of steak. And it's good, it's tender, but when I'm eating steak, I want some fat. I want some marbling. I want that ribeye. And a filet mignon has very little to no fat on it, but yet you're paying a premium price. I don't think I've ever paid for a filet or filet mignon. So in my opinion, that's overrated. So stay away from that. Stay away from the big tomahawk ribeyes and just get you a regular bone-in ribeye. Savage Cabbage. That's a great name. That sounded like I was being a smartass, but no, that's a good name. I know that's not your real name, but it's a good handle. That's what I'm trying to say. I would consider myself a paint-by-numbers cook. I can follow a recipe to a T, but I would like to expand my horizons. I'm hesitant to try lately due to a very tight budget. Any advice to help us amateurs step out of the comfort zone? Well, one way to step out of that is to get my kitchen survival guide, Savage Cabbage. Again, if you can't, if money's tight, just holler at me. I'll give it to you for free. By the way, I'm not as good a guy as some people think I am. I have zero overhead on these things. Like, you know, it took a long, I spent a lot of time and effort and in some weird way, you could say this is part of my life's work. Cause some of these recipes I have been cooking and tweaking and perfecting for over 20 years. I've been cooking, I've been cooking professionally and personally for over 25 years. My first job ever was in a restaurant, when I was like 15, 16, and I've been cooking on and off professionally and on and off, or pretty much on, not off personally ever since. So I get a lot of, time and experience, wrapped up into these recipes, but as far as like actual overhead, you know, it's not like a t-shirt that I'm having to pay for and mail out. You know, these are just, it's a PDF file. I typed them up and, I just email them. So, you know, no sweat off my back to give these out for free. I mean, yes, if you can afford them and you'd like them, you know, I do, you know, it helps me supplement my income, especially now that I can't tour for God knows how long. Not to go off on the poor mouth woe is me stories, but you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you're so kind and generous. Yeah, okay, thanks, but it's not like I'm, you know, mailing out actual food or actual merchandise. It's just an email, no big deal. But to answer your question, I'm sorry, dude. Any advice to help amateurs stem out? Well, I think just the best way to start to learn to cook is think about the things that you like to eat. What really started me down the cooking path as far as like for my own personal enjoyment is years ago, I was living in Canton, Georgia, and I think we had one or two barbecue restaurants in town, and they both sucked. And I loved barbecue, but I was so bummed and frustrated that the one or two options that I had close by, they just really sucked. They just weren't good. And I said, you know what? I love barbecue. I can't get good barbecue in my town. I'm going to teach myself how to make damn barbecue. And I did. I bought a smoker. And of course, you know, like anything, there's trial and error. You know, first several things I smoked, you know, sucked. I've ruined many of cuts of meat. But that was something I enjoyed eating, didn't have access to. So I taught myself how to make it. And over time, and just like anything else with repetition, you get better, you learn from your mistakes. But what I would say to you, Savage Cabbage, is to find a few dishes that you really enjoy eating that maybe, you know, you don't want to spend too much money on, you know, going out to eat and, you know, getting takeout all the time on those particular dishes, whether it be something pricey or not. and just teach yourself step by step how to make that. If you like omelets, learn to make an omelet. If you like a good chili or a stew, learn to make that. If you like, you know, chicken fried steak, whatever it is. pardon me. But yeah, it's just repetition, and cooking is a skill. I don't know if it's a talent. What I mean is, yeah, with comedy is a talent. There are people, there are comedians that have, through time and through repetition and through perseverance, have learned how to do stand-up comedy, have learned how to write a joke and to present a joke on stage. But if you ain't funny, it's never going to be that great. You got to be funny first. You got to have that natural talent at being funny, and then you can teach yourself how to be a comedian. But you can. Where am I going with this? There are many, many comedians out there who have learned how to do it, but they don't have a natural talent. Therefore, they're only going to be so good. Their ceiling is low because the natural ability isn't there. I feel like with cooking, it's just something you can teach yourself. I mean, yes, you got to have a natural ability. You got to have a good palate. You got to understand what tastes good and what flavors merge together. But I feel like cooking, unlike stand-up, is something that you don't have to be born with a whole lot of talent. You can make yourself a good cook through trial and error and perseverance. So, yeah, as far as, you know, certain recipes or whatever, I wouldn't know. But I do, you know, holler at me. I'll hook you up with these kitchen survival guides, and it's a good starting point. But yeah, I think it's just like anything, man. It's just reps, and it's just starting small. Don't get too fancy, and just find what you like to eat and learn how to cook it. So there you go. I don't know if that helps. Mike Maskey, that's a good name. Give me some easy cast iron recipes I could do before I lose my mind in quarantine. Oh, man, the cast iron is so great. I love it so much. Dude, you can make a nice cast iron cornbread. That's fun. Cooking a steak or a burger on a cast iron skillet. That's so much fun. If you don't know my cast iron skillet, I got a couple different steak recipes. The real basic one, the easiest one, that doesn't even require the oven or the broiler. Pull out your steak 30 minutes before you're ready to cook it. Let it bring up to room temp. Rub a little vegetable oil all over the steak. A little bit of salt and pepper, kosher salt, fresh black pepper. Don't really mess with anything else. Once the thing's been sitting out about 30 minutes, crank up the cast iron skillet. Get about as hot as it'll go until it starts to smoke. And by the way, you can hold off on the pepper. There's some debate. Some people don't like to put pepper on the steak before it goes into the scalding hot skillet because I think it burns the pepper. I still don't know if that makes a difference or not, but you can always add that pepper later. But anyway, 30 minutes, room temp, little oil, a little kosher salt, smoking hot pan, no oil in the pan. That's why you oil the steak. Get that pan smoking hot, throw that steak, depending on, you know, what it is. You know, with me, it would be a ribeye, about a 3/4 of an inch to an inch thick. But depending on how thick it is, your average steak, if we're going for medium rare, I'd say 2-2.5 minutes. Don't touch it. Throw it on that pan, press it down with your hand or your tongs so it's really tight and pressed down into the pan. Do not touch it. 2.5 minutes. Flip it. Once you flip it, then lower the heat a little bit. Cook it about another minute. After about a minute, throw in a hunk of butter, and you can throw in some garlic cloves, and cook it about another minute. And for those last 30 seconds, you want to spoon baste that butter and that garlic on top of that steak. Pull it off, let it rest for about 10 minutes, and oh boy, that is a quick and easy way to cook a steak in a cast iron skillet. But yeah, there you go. Cast iron skillet to a steak. Like I said, cornbread. I'm trying to think of some other stuff that's like really cast iron specific. I don't know. Put me on the spot. I'll get back to you on that one. But for now, cook a steak in a cast iron skillet. That's a good time. Philip Williamson asks, what exactly does a bay leaf do the dishes? Do to the dishes? Why am I always adding into spaghetti sauce or other sauces just to take it out later? Well, it's like anything else. It's just it's a spice. It's an ingredient. I'm not going to die on the bay leaf hill. I like it. You know, it adds a little unique flavor that maybe you can't find anywhere else. But yeah, you got to think of it. It's a spice that you. I get that it's inconvenient. You got to take it out at the end. But yeah, just, you know, if you don't like it, how about this? How about this, Philip? I don't know why I'm getting combative. How about this, you son of a bitch? Leave it out and then see if you can tell the difference. And if you can tell the difference, then, you know, whether that's good or bad, then proceed accordingly. But yeah, I get that. Yeah, you're not, but for some reason, and then of course I also heard people say that's not true, but you're not supposed to leave in and eat the bay leaf. You know, I put it in my chili, I put it in my gumbo, stuff like that. I put it in my marinara sauce. But I think, I don't know if it'll kill you or poison you or what, but I hope it wouldn't do either one of those, or else what a risk you're taking by throwing it in there. But yeah, you're supposed to take it out. It's supposed to impart some sort of herbal component to it. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, try that, Philip. Leave it out and see if you can tell the difference next time. John Lamas. I haven't proofread any of these, so I'm just going down the list. Big one here. I've been heavily into smoking meats for the past few years. Wanted to share a recipe for my favorite piece of barbecue meat, pork shoulder. Okay, well, hell, why not? John's going to give us a pork shoulder recipe. Here we go. First off, make the injection. I never do that, but hey, I'm not saying you're wrong. I need to try that, by the way. All right, shit, I'm just going to read John Lamas's pork shoulder recipe. Here we go. This is good pod. First off, make the injection. 3/4 of a cup of orange and pineapple juice, mix 50-50. 1/2 cup of water, 1/2 cup of white sugar, 1/4 cup kosher salt, 2 tablespoons Worcestershire sauce. Mix well until sugar and salt is dissolved. 8 to 10 pound bone and pork shoulder. Remove fat cap or at least trim down to 1/4 inch or less. Good tip there. I love the fat, but yeah, sometimes on those pork shoulders or Boston butts, that fat cap is a little too much. Inject with solution throughout until it's all used up and let it sit for 12 to 24 hours covered in the fridge. About 2 hours before you're ready to put the shoulder in the smoker, rub liberally on all sides with your favorite dry rub. I prefer Cosmos Q Honey Chipotle Killer Bee or Memphis Dust. Google Memphis Dust and you can find recipes to easily make it yourself. Fire up your smoker at 225. Yep. Add a couple of chunks of apple wood. Put the shoulder in, fat cap up, and let it rip. Yep, correct. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. Not trying to second guess or judge every step of the way, but I'm impressed with your skills so far. Applewood, I would also throw in some hickory wood. Once the internal temp reaches 160, pull the shoulder out and wrap it in 2 layers of butcher paper. That's a good move. Put back in the smoker until internal temp reaches 200. Take the shoulder out, leave it in the butcher paper, wrap it in 2 to 3 towels, let it rest in a cooler, microwave oven, or whatever for 2 hours. After 2 hours, unwrap the shoulder and it should be perfect, so you'll be able to use 2 forks to pull it apart with no effort. General time frame with rest is anywhere from 13 to 15 hours, but I promise it's so worth it. Enjoy. Well, how about that? Thank you, John. Not every day you get a badass smoked pork shoulder recipe. But yeah, I got no problem with anything you said there, bud. Other than, like I said, I love apple wood. I love cherry wood. But I would definitely get a little hickory in there, too. That's just my personal preference. Jake Rivera asked, do you have any bacon cooking techniques? Any thoughts on non-pork bacons, such as duck and venison? Is it even really bacon? I don't think so. I think that would be duck and venison. Never really even heard of that. Never heard of venison bacon or duck bacon. I mean, I get the concept there with the venison. I don't really get the concept with the duck. I like to cook my bacon in the oven. I can't remember the temp. I think it's 400. It's either 375 or 400. Put the bacon on a cookie sheet. Put a little aluminum foil on there just to kind of save your sheet. But yes, put the bacon, nice strips, on the cookie sheet. Preheated oven to, I'll have to double check, but I think it's 400. And I do about 13 to 15 minutes. And boom. It's just a little easier for me than cooking it in the skillet or the frying pan, just because, you know, it starts to curl up and, you know, you're really fighting it with you got the tongs and you got to flip and all that. With this technique in the oven, you don't have to flip it. So you just throw it on a sheet and bake it for, I do about 13 to 15 minutes and I think it's 400, but yeah, don't know anything about other types of bacon. I don't know. Duck venison sounds okay. I never had it. but who knows? I used to eat that fake and bacon, that vegan veggie bacon. Oh, more power to folks like Kyle trying to stay away from the meats, but that stuff is pretty unimpressive. Alexander Honesto, I always remember that name. That's a good name. You talk about your love of Indian food. Have you ever tried making your favorite dish? No, unfortunately, ethnic foods is something that intimidates me right now, just because, I don't know, there's just thousands of years of tradition with some of these cuisines that I think I'm going to learn how to do it in a day. The only thing I make is I make my own butter chicken, and that's in my one of my recipe books. I love the butter chicken. You know, get those Indian spices, the gram masala, and some of that other stuff. And oh boy, I never know—is it turmeric or turmeric? Turmeric. But yeah, the only thing I make is the butter chicken. I would like to learn how to do like a paneer, like the cheese. I love like a sag paneer. I love the paneer tikka masala, any of that stuff. I even love, well, speaking of vegetarian, man, Indian food, I think I've said this before, that's the one cuisine that I could probably have no problem with being a vegetarian if I could just stuck to Indian food, because the lentils and the dals and the chickpeas and all that, oh, it's so good. I love all that stuff. But yeah, that's something I need to branch out. Indian food and what's another? Korean food. Indian food and Korean food are two cuisines that I absolutely freaking love, but I don't know much at all as far as making them, other than my butter chicken. But yeah, oh, Korean food. Good God. We got a place here in Long Beach that delivers, and the kimchi pork belly fried rice. Are you kidding me? Get out of town. Oh boy. Good times. Lee Singleton, my buddy Lee. How's it going, Lee? Lee tried to take me to Howlin' Race last month, but I couldn't make it. I was out of town. Lee asked, Dave, I need a recipe that isn't burgers, hamburger, helper for a giant package of ground beef that my mom has. Friggin' chili, Lee. Make some damn chili with that ground beef. Yeah, man. Chili all day, son. I'm not going to bombard you with the entire recipe now. Lee, if you don't have my books, holler at me. I'll hook you up with that chili recipe. But yeah. Oh, you got a bunch of ground beef sitting around? Make you some damn chili. Chili's wonderful. Oh, I love chili so much. But it's also fun to cook because it's hard to screw up. You know, just brown that beef. I'm not going to give you the whole recipe, but you know, brown off that beef, strain some of that grease out, throw in some onions, throw in some garlic. You know, roast up some onions and garlic and peppers and puree that shit and throw it in there, and you throw in a little beef stock, throw in a little beer, a little bourbon, you know, of course, all your spices, your chili powder, your smoked paprika, maybe a little cayenne, and oh boy, some secret ingredients, you know, some pureed sardines, some dark chocolate to get that umami. Oh God, chili. I love it so much. Make some chili, Lee. You got ground beef sitting around. Make some chili. Frank Castle asks, best food you've ever got from a gas station. I'm from Louisiana, and we find the best Cajun boiled peanuts in little mom-pop gas stops. Yeah, man, Louisiana in general, man, they so much good food in gas stations there. You know what? I think it was either Mississippi or, Louisiana gas station, best food, friggin' boudin. Boudin. I always want to pronounce it the way it's spelled. Boudin. Give me some of that boudin. If I'm in Louisiana at a gas station, hopefully you can find some boudin, some fried boudin balls. If you guys don't know about boudin, I think it's spelled B-O-U-D-I-N, something like that. But I believe the proper local pronunciation, you don't even pronounce the N at the end. It's just boudin, boudin. Give me some of that boudin. But oh boy, it's like, I got a bit about it. I'm not going to do my bit, but it's like sausage's ugly cousin. It's in the realm of the sausage world, but oh boy, they put, you know, liver, some beef liver, I don't know if it's beef liver or duck liver, some rice and spices and pork, and oh, love some boudin. But yeah, the best, and I've had boudin, great boudin at a gas station in Louisiana. What is it? I know those aren't gas stations per se. The Best Stop. Best Stop's not a gas station, but there was some place I got it at a gas station. It was amazing. But yeah, you can find, I grew up in Waleska, Georgia. And I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been to Waleska in years. But right at the main intersection, the one-stop sign in the town at the intersection of Highway 108 and Highway 140, sat an old gas station. And they would have, they'd cook biscuits in the morning. You get you a plain biscuit, get you a sausage biscuit, sausage, egg, and cheese, bacon biscuit. And, that's a big thing in the South. Gas station biscuits. Oh, yeah. Some Cajun food or some biscuits at a gas station. That's, and they weren't, it was very, very like lo-fi, old school. Like there'd just be one old grandma in there with like a bunch of different Tupperware. You know, like a Tupperware full of sausage patties and a Tupperware full of fried chicken breast and a Tupperware full of bacon that she had, you know, she continually making and filling up the little Tupperwares. And then she'd, you know, pull out a whole tray of biscuits and crack a biscuit open and throw on a sausage and a fried egg. And oh, boy, God, good stuff. Gas station breakfast biscuits, get out of town. Robert Smith asks, I want to use your biscuit recipe to make cheese biscuits. What type of cheese should I use and how much should I put in the dough? I have my biscuit recipe is in volume one of my cookbook. And I think the very next recipe, pardon me, is the my variation of the Red Lobster Cheddar Bay biscuit. I call it the Cheddar Dave biscuit. And I use shredded cheddar, shred it yourself, not the pre-shredded stuff. And, you know, can you use too much cheese? I don't think so. Just get you a nice hunk of Tillamook sharp cheddar and grade that shit yourself. And just throw it. I think the only difference in the two recipes is obviously the cheese, and I add some Old Bay spice, some Old Bay seasoning in there. But yeah, just get in there and have some fun with some hand grated cheddar cheese there, Robert. Taylor Dykes, I've been looking to make hush puppies. And I got your cookbook for the recipe. Any advice and tips? I'm not trying to sound like a smartass, but just follow the recipe. You know, I use beer. I use beer in my hush puppies. Volume 3 of my cookbook, I have Bud Light hush puppies. And you could use any beer, probably. But one time I was making hush puppies, and I was out of milk, and I had some Bud Light. And I substituted that, and it was great. Gave it a little bit of a lighter feel to it. Any advice and tips? Just follow that recipe. It's pretty good. Works for me. Bud Light Hush Puppies. There you go. Carl Fisher, what's your favorite Dutch oven recipe? Oh, I love a Dutch oven. Any super stews. I cook all my chili and gumbo and stuff in my Dutch oven. I don't really use it for anything else. I mean, I don't have a Dutch oven recipe per se, like something you would use in a classic Dutch oven, you know, a campfire recipe or some sort of casserole or a bake or, you know, anything like that. I just, I love my Dutch oven for soups and stews and gumbos and chilies. The thing that's seen the most, my Dutch oven has seen the most is probably chili and gumbo, so... Just a big, sturdy. If you don't know what I'm talking about with the Dutch oven, folks, it's just like a big pot, just ceramic. The ones I use, it's not the best, but it's pretty damn good. I use a Lodge, and it's enamel, cast iron. It started off as cast iron, and then I think they dip it somewhere in the process. They dip it in enamel, so it's the base. It's got the sturdiness of cast iron. But it's not as abrasive as cast iron, and just retains heat, spreads the heat out really well, and you can just put those sucker on and just let it roll all day. Like cooking a gumbo, you know, I'll let a gumbo roll 8-10 hours sometimes, and just does no damage to your big heavy duty Dutch oven. So yeah, gumbos and chilies and stews and stuff like that. Right now, like I said, I'm looking at it right now. I'm making the chicken tortilla soup. Which reminds me, I gotta go stir it real quick. Hold on. All right, yeah, sorry, I had to stir my soup. Oh, this is a funny one. Joel Henline, he just says, "I hate sweet potatoes." Well, you suck, Joel. No, personal preference. We all got them. I love sweet potatoes. Joel, can I say three things? Give three little tips with sweet potato. Butter, brown sugar, and cinnamon. Bake you up a nice sweet potato and load that son of a bitch up with some butter, little brown sugar, and little cinnamon. Oh, boy. I get that at that point it's more of a dessert, but, man, that is a good time. But, hey, if you hate sweet potatoes, you hate sweet potatoes. I hate sweet potatoes. All right. Thanks for checking in nonetheless, Joel. Yeah, I get it. Not for everybody, but, yeah. We'll try baked sweet potato with a lot of butter, a little brown sugar, a little cinnamon. Good times. Caster Blagler? What was the best tasting thing you ever whipped up in the van? Not much. Boy, the van days. I think that's obviously why I cook so much now, because I had about 4 years where I couldn't cook much of anything. No, I didn't whip up much of anything. I didn't have, never did get around to getting the deep cycle battery that could power, a small stovetop or even a microwave. So all I did was I just had a cooler and a lot of sandwiches. A lot of turkey sandwiches, a lot of PB&J, and a lot of fast food. So, yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any. I mean, that's it. I couldn't cook. I literally did not cook. I didn't have a microwave, didn't have a little camping stove, anything. So, yeah, it's just a lot of brown bag sack lunches kind of shit. William Shoulders asks, "Hey, Dave, just wondering, what are your all-time favorite fried chicken restaurants across the country?" I've been to one of the original Gus's in Memphis, Tennessee, and we have one out here in Austin now. But my favorites from around the USA are Uncle Lou's Fried Chicken in Memphis, Mitchie Tavern in Charlottesville, Virginia. Did I pronounce that right? Mitchie? Yeah. And if you want to count it as fried chicken, Duff's Famous Wings in Buffalo, New York. And an honorable mention, but sadly has shut its doors for good since I last went, was Bryce's Cafeteria in Texarkana. William, unfortunately, I have been to none of those other than Gus's, of course. Don't know about Mitchie's, don't know about Uncle Lou's, don't know about Bryce's. I think maybe I've been to Duff's. I went to some legendary, iconic place last time I was in Buffalo and had wings, and they were great. I don't remember if it was Duff's or not. But my absolute favorite fried chicken, I just have not found anything better, is Gus's. Gus's is my shit. Now, it's naturally a little spicy, but it is not Nashville hot chicken. Now, Hal and Ray's is amazing. But even I've talked a lot about Hal and Ray's here in Los Angeles. They do Nashville hot chicken the same way in Nashville, Hattie B's or Bolton's or Prince's. In Nashville, by the way, Hattie B's is my choice over Bolton or Prince's. Even though I know Prince's is the OG, still it's like, it's good, but I prefer Hattie B's. But, yeah, I consider Nashville hot chicken and fried chicken two separate entities. And if we're talking about just fried chicken, I just haven't had any better than Gus's. They just nail it. They do like a wet batter. I don't know what they do to it, but, you know, as far as the batter, it's a batter, not a dredge. You know, not to bore you with those details, but they whip up a wet batter, and then they, you know, with eggs and probably maybe a little beer and a bunch of spices, and then they dip the chicken into the wet batter before it hits the fryer, as opposed to a traditional way where you might dip it in milk or buttermilk or eggs and then roll it in flour and then back. But yeah, and it just coats the chicken so well, and the spice level is on point, and the chicken itself is great. You know, that's a big part of it. You know, you got to use actual good, you know, chicken. I don't know all the details with the free range, the organic or whatever, but not, you know, you got to have a good product to begin with. And I feel like theirs is pretty damn good. But yeah, Hal and Ray's is great. But yeah, as far as hot chicken, but Gus's my absolute favorite. I'm trying to think of others that I like. I love Popeyes. I think Popeyes is pretty on point. Now, obviously, you talk about quality of the chicken. You know, you can tell the difference from something like Popeyes as opposed to Gus's. But as far as fast food chicken, I love that. Mrs. Winter's used to be my jam back when they were around. I think there's one or two of those still floating around. But back in the day, Mrs. Winter's was great. I'm trying to think of other, like, legit fried chicken places. I don't know. it's hard for me to think of anything other than the Gus's. They just nail it for me. But yeah, and unfortunately now Gus's is probably in. They probably got 30, 40 branches. You know, started in Memphis, like you said, and branched out, and we got two in L.A. now, or two in L.A. and one in Long Beach. I got one down here now, so that's exciting. Oh, Folks! Remember Folks? That was good shit back in the day. It was Po Folks, and then it was Folks, a regional chain, kind of like not casual dining, kind of like a sit down, a family dining. Yeah, kind of like what would you compare Folks to? Like a kind of like a Cracker Barrel. Yeah, in that vein of a Cracker Barrel. But that was some good stuff. Jacob Rivas asks, "Hey Dave, wanted to check in on your thoughts on ways to expand my Southern breakfast skills. I grew up always having Mexican breakfast as a Mexican, but I felt my Southern breakfast abilities are lacking. So what's a good classic Southern breakfast to start with?" Off the top of my head, biscuits and gravy. Nothing more Southern than biscuits and gravy. If you don't have my biscuit recipe, Jacob, email me at davestonecomedy@gmail.com. I will send you my biscuit recipe, and I'll send you my gravy recipe. But when I think of Southern breakfast, sometimes that can just be the star of the show, the biscuits and gravy. Sometimes it's, you know, it's the opening act. It's a side dish. Regardless, it's always in there somewhere. If you're talking a traditional Southern breakfast, you got to have some biscuits and gravy. I love that. Dude, good old patted sausage. Get you a pound of that Jimmy Dean sausage, you know, break it up in little patties. Oh, boy, that to me, sausage and gravy and biscuits. And of course, you know, you can have some eggs, you can have some bacon, whatever. But when I think of Southern breakfast off the top of my head, I think of biscuits and gravy and patted sausage, or you could also call them sausage patties. But yeah, biscuits and gravy, man. You got to incorporate that into your breakfast game, dude. If you need that recipe, give me a holler. I'll hook you up with it. Oh, how many we got left here? I want to get through all these for you guys. So thanks for hanging in there. What else we got? Miles D. Grant, Dave, I know you have a pimento cheese recipe. I've heard it before, but right now I can't find it. Could you give it again or even just straight up send it to me? I'm still working right now, which is better than many where I live, but also everything costs 25% more, so I can't afford your recipe books right now. Sorry. I do, however, want to make some on my next day off to go with the crackers I could buy and replace the meat that simply was not available. Sorry. Thank you so much. Yeah, Miles, definitely. You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and give you that damn thing right now. Let's see if I can find it. Where is my pimento cheese? It's a pretty quick and easy recipe. And pimento cheese is just something everybody should know how to make. Man, it's just a good thing to have around. It's good to just have pimento cheese hanging around in case of an emergency. Let's see here. I got it somewhere in here. Banana pudding, chocolate pecan pie, mashed potatoes, onion gravy, gumbo. Could have swore pimento cheese was in the first book. Here we go. Pimento cheese. All right. This one's pretty simple. Pimento cheese, everybody. Here's what you do. By the way, if you don't know what pimento cheese is, it's like a cheese spread. I wouldn't say it's a dip. It's more of a spread. And pimento refers to the pimento pepper. Pimento is a member of the pepper family, little red pepper. Not spicy at all, not a hot pepper. And if you can't find pimentos, just a red bell pepper will do. You can roast off a red bell pepper. This recipe here calls for a red bell pepper because those are easier to get a hold of than a jar of pimentos. Here we go. 1 pound block of sharp cheddar cheese. All right, you want to get the sharp or the extra sharp. You know, what's the point of mild cheddar? And you want to grate it by hand. Don't get the pre-shredded stuff because they do. First of all, they do something different to it. There's something in there that's not good for you. I read some article about they add something to the shredded cheese. Some of the companies do, but also it doesn't melt as well as if you you don't need to melt it for this. There's no melting involved in this, but it's always better to grate it by hand because, the shreds are a little smaller and, I prefer it that way. So a 1 pound block of sharp cheddar cheese, and you want to grate it by hand. Preferably maybe on the finer grate, you know, some cheese graters will have two or three different, cuts there. You want to use it on the small. I like the smaller one, but you know, whatever floats your boat. One cup of sour cream, half a cup of mayo, half a cup of cream cheese, one red bell pepper, 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar, 2 tablespoons of hot sauce, 1 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1 tablespoon of black pepper, and 1 teaspoon of salt. Black pepper, fresh black pepper, salt is usually kosher salt. What you want to do is wash and dry that bell pepper, then scorch it directly on the eye of the stove over high heat. And if you've never done that, this is a great little technique. If you have a gas stove, it works great. You just crank up that flame on high and get you some tongs or something. Just like you're cooking marshmallows, you're making s'mores, cooking marshmallows over a campfire. Same technique. You just want to put that pepper right there on there. Right there on the heat, and just scorch the shit out of it. If you got a gas stove, you could probably do it on a gas stove. I don't know, it might mess up your burner a little bit. You could also roast it in the oven, 400, or broil it. You're just trying to char this pepper. So if you don't have a gas stove, maybe broil it or roast it 400 degrees, bake, or if you got the broiler going hot. But we're just trying to char it. We're trying to get turn that skin all black. So that's what you're doing there. Occasionally rotate the pepper so that the entire surface area of the pepper is scorched black. What you want to do then is scrape off about 95% of the skin with a knife. It's okay if a small amount remains. You're not going to get every little black piece off there. But you want to get most of the, scrape it off with a knife or a wet paper towel. Get that charred black skin off there. Seriously, like burn the shit out of it and then scrape that black skin off. Remove the seeds and stems, and you want to dice that pepper up real fine. Nice little fine dice. Throw the diced pepper in a bowl and mix thoroughly with the other ingredients. All right. My steps here. I'm sorry, I'm reading my own book, and I feel like the steps, I missed some steps, or maybe I'm assuming that it's, I might need to update this recipe. But yeah, okay, in the bowl, you want to start with your cheese, right? So grate that cheese, throw it in a bowl. Okay, here's what I would do. Sorry, it's been a while since I've read this recipe, and I feel like I left out a part. All right. In a bowl, you want to take your sour cream, your mayo, and your cream cheese. All right, you want that cream cheese to get softened, so throw that out an hour or two before you want to make this. Take the sour cream, the mayo, and the cream cheese. Mix all that shit up together, just those three items, together real good with a wooden spoon or whatever. All right, then you could add in your hot sauce, your smoked paprika, your black pepper, your salt, and your red wine vinegar. Mix that shit in real good. Then you could take that diced pepper, you know, that you got, throw that in, mix all that in. What you want to do is mix all the ingredients together minus the cheese, because it's going to be hard to mix all this shit when you got the cheese in there. So mix up, basically you're making like a sauce or a dressing, you know, the same way you would like a coleslaw or whatever. You want to mix everything but the cheese together. And then the last step, you throw in all that grated cheese and mix that together. You see what I'm saying? You want to incorporate all the flavors and the spices and the seasoning first. Then the last step, you would add the cheese. And boom, that's it. There's no cooking involved. You don't, other than the pepper. But yeah, if you're going off of my, I'm sorry, man. I feel like I left out a big chunk there on the directions. Or maybe I thought, hey, figure it out. It's pimento cheese. But there you go. That's a pimento cheese recipe. Man, I feel like I'm getting long-winded. It's weird being by myself without having Kyle to bust my balls when I'm talking too much. So yeah, there we go. Who's that? Miles? There you go, Miles. There's some damn pimento cheese. Joel Micah Harris. Joel is the guy who's made some badass art for Kyle and I. Very talented artist. What's up, Joel? His signature dish is loaded stromboli. Have you ever made stromboli, Dave? If so, do you have any tips or go-to recipe for it? I have not. I have not made stromboli, although I love stromboli. If you're talking about basically the Italian hot pocket, is that what we're talking about? The stromboli that you get what's the pizza place in the mall that people shit on that I've always liked? What's the name of that place? Ah, damn it. Sbarro. Duh. Yeah, I used to get the stromboli at Sbarro. Kind of like a calzone, you know, but open ended. I don't know, like a lovely Italian bear claw. No, I don't know anything about making those, Joel, but now that you brought that up, that might be something I have to look into, because, oh, what's better than a good calzone or stromboli, just Italian just the dough and the cheese and the sauce and the meat. Oh, good stuff. Yeah, sorry, Joel. No tips on that, but boy, you may have planted a seed there. Ian Bowers, convince me that bay leaves do a goddamn thing. Oh, that's funny that we've already had somebody say that. I can't convince you, Ian. I'll just tell you what I told the other guy. Leave it out, and then you tell me if you can tell the difference. But he, all caps, Ian's pissed. Convince me that bay leaves do a goddamn thing. Sorry, Ian. Try it without it and see if you can notice. I don't know. Eric Wentz, oxtail in the freezer, ready to smoke. Any recipe ideas? I'm looking to incorporate peppers, OJ, ginger, and jerk. Oh, I like all that shit, buddy. I got a nice oxtail recipe in volume, I think the new one, volume 3. If you don't have that, Eric, you can call me. I'll just give you the book or give you the recipe, whatever. Call me. Call me on the phone. You can do that too, but I don't give my number on here. Email me, DaveStoneComedy@gmail.com or the Boogie Monster one, BoogieMonsterPodcast@gmail. I check the Dave Stone one a lot more frequently. But yeah, I got a pretty solid recipe that I feel for stewed oxtails. Man, I love oxtails so much. If you guys don't know about oxtails or Caribbean food, Jamaican food in general, just talk about an underrated food. Caribbean food, Jamaican food, oh my God. Oxtails, jerk chicken, curry goat, curry chicken, oh, rice and peas. First time I went to a Korean Jamaican place in Atlanta, there's one, I think it's still there. It's on Moreland Ave, right just, that would be south of I-20. When you cross over I-20, if you're going southbound, it's literally the first building on the right. Once you cross over I-20, going south on Moreland. I forgot the name, a little hole-in-the-wall place. Delicious. And she kept saying rice and peas. You want to, I'm not going to do the accent. She said she had the accent. I'm not going to do it. She kept saying, you want rice and peas. And they look like beans to me. And I was like, yeah, I'll take rice and beans. Yeah, I'll take rice and beans. She kept saying rice and peas. I was like, rice and beans? Yeah, sure. But yeah, it's I guess they call peas beans. I don't know. It looked like beans to me. Kind of like a white rice and black beans, kind of a Cuban thing. Regardless, oh my God, I love Jamaican food so much. Please, if you haven't tried it, seek it out. Just, you're talking about stewed meats. They stew this stuff in these pots and just all day. And it just, I love the stewed meats. You know, some of the Mexican places will do, Guisado's Tacos is famous for all their meats are stewed. They'll put on carnitas and stuff like that, and just stew it in a big pot for hours and hours, and it just all just turns into one delicious, gelatinous, meaty, creamy mess. Oh, good times. But yeah, oxtails, yeah, if you need that recipe, holler at me, but I like what you're thinking with the peppers, the OJ, and the ginger, and the jerk. Can't get enough of that shit. Good stuff. All right, we're almost done. Three more. Daniel Rodriguez. Dave, what are the staple ingredients you absolutely have to have in your kitchen at all times? Mine are garlic, onions, canned tomato, and some kind of jalapenos. Absolutely, dude. Garlic and onions, absolutely. Tomatoes, gotta have. Jalapenos, I like jalapenos, but I'm a wuss, man. I don't have the tongue for it. I like hot and spicy food, but I get to a certain level, and it's just hiccup city. I can't even finish the meal. I'm just hiccuping all over the place. People ask me to leave the party. It's rough, so I got to watch out for the jalapenos. Staples in my kitchen are definitely garlic and onions. Eggs, got to have eggs. I like having green onions. I love having green onions around because they work great in omelets. They work as a garnish for soups and stews. But I'm with you on the garlic and the onions. I love having white rice around, garlic onions, green onions, rice, eggs. Yeah, that's probably the staples there. Canned tomatoes, you know, it's always good to have canned tomatoes around. I never know how to pronounce this person's name. I see this name pop up a lot. Torkel Dewar? I'm sure I mispronounced that. Can I bake an apple pie in a cast iron? Of course you can. I don't have a round baking tray, but it seems like the cast iron would be okay. Right? Absolutely right. Yes. Oh, when somebody earlier was asking about cast iron cobblers and shit, cobblers and pies. I love a good cast iron cobbler, peach cobbler, apple cobbler. But you could totally do that. You could totally do that. Yeah, just treat it like you normally would. Make sure you grease it, you know, a little Crisco, a little butter, a little oil, whatever. so it doesn't stick. But yeah, there you go. Use that cast iron, make you a pie. Last one, volunteer casts. What are the most important power tools in the kitchen? Things you have to plug in. We just got an air fryer. If anyone is needing an air fryer, they stink. Hope y'all are doing good. That's funny. They stink. I love stink. Such a good, you know, it stinks. Yeah, I don't know about the air fryer yet. I haven't gone into that realm with the air fryers and the Instapots and all that. The most frequently used power tool in my kitchen is the little, is it the bullet? Little bullet blender. Because I love to make purees in all my soups and stews and stuff. I love to roast the garlic and the onions and the peppers and then puree them. And I do that, you know, any type of sauce. I pureed some gravy the other day. That gravy I was talking about with the turkey, for some reason it was a little gritty. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I don't know if the flour, but you got to cook that flour taste out. I know to do that. But texture-wise, it was just a little gritty, and I couldn't figure it out. So I took all the shit and threw it in the I ran it through the bullet, blended it, pureed it real well, and but yeah, that's my most frequently used power tool. Is get you a little the you know what I'm talking about, the small one, not the big blender that you would make a smoothie or whatever with, but this one's like the size of a little bit bigger than a Coke can, you know, probably 16-ounce little bullet. And throw your veggies or whatever you want in there and puree the shit out of them, and then incorporate that into your sauces and soups and stews. And yeah, that's the one I use the most. But I love, I don't do as much baking as I should other than biscuits, but Katie got me the badass KitchenAid mixer. The big, I'm sure there's a more specific name for it, but the big mixer, with the big metal bowl. And the paddles and all, oh boy, that's cool. I don't use that enough, but when I do use it, it's like, oh, this is so much fun, so easy. But yeah, I like the little bullet to puree shit up with. Guys, there we go. Sorry if that was a bit long-winded, but just something different this month. I enjoy doing the Dave's Kitchen videos. I don't know how good I am at it. Just something about me on camera, just alone. It's weird. And I feel like sometimes they're a little dry, a little dull. And, since we're all having to cook more now, rather than just do one recipe in one video, I thought we'd just have a good discussion here about all things food and all things cooking. And if you like it, let me know. Might make this more of a regular thing. So I don't know. But regardless, always looking to provide some sort of content for you guys, for the patrons. Seriously, I cannot... I don't know. I don't want to get emotional. But we've actually gained patrons this month, which is weird. We've gained patrons since this crazy coronavirus and the quarantine and the economy. And guys, I mean, it means the world to me. I really appreciate it. And if you guys need to bail out, you know, for a while or permanently or whatever, you know, I totally understand. You got to take care of yourself first. You got to take care of your family first. That $4 a month, I do appreciate it. And Kyle appreciates it. And yeah, guys, from the bottom of my heart, really, really do appreciate it. And everybody who's bought cookbooks this month, you guys have saved my ass. I'll just go ahead and say it. You guys have saved my ass. I lost a big chunk of income having to cancel that tour. And just knowing that you guys are there willing to buy the cookbooks and to be patrons. And I've had people who've already bought cookbooks who are like, hey, that was really cool that you're giving them away for free, people need them. Here's $20, here's $30. I already got it. I don't want it. This is just to help that loss. And like I said, like, there's no overhead. I'm not losing money. You know, if you can't afford to buy it, you weren't going to buy it anyway. So it's not like I'm, you know, it doesn't cost me anything to send an email. But regardless, I appreciate it. And yeah, patrons, thank you so much. We've gained patrons this month. I was for sure that we were going to lose them. And, I was going to have to deal with that. But you guys are there. And it means the world to me. And yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Boogie Monster every Tuesday. Stoneberg's every Monday. We should have the regular bonus Q&A episode dropping here any day now. But here, instead of Dave's Kitchen this month, here's your little Dave's Kitchen Q&A. And these are all amazing questions, guys. Really, really appreciate the fact that you took time out to ask me these questions. And I hope I answer them to your liking. And You know, I'm not going to try to bullshit you. If I don't know something, I'll tell you I don't know. You're not, just good world advice in general. You're not expected to know everything. There is no harm in occasionally saying, I don't know. Some people need to adhere to that a little more than others. But anyway, thanks for letting me ramble. You guys are the best. I love you, and we'll see you soon.